This is episode 2 of Cutie. In the previous episode, we looked at the initial stages of Cutie, when patients are trapped in a seemingly never-ending cycle of misdiagnosis and dismissal. We looked at how misogyny, misconceptions, and a lack of research have not only shaped the science, but also the patient's experiences, making it almost impossible to get a diagnosis. In this episode, we're moving on to the next phase of the story. Treatment. Many, unfortunately, don't make it to this stage, but for those who do, how did they find it?
It was like one of the craziest days of my life. How have we not come to this earlier? I couldn't believe I'd missed it.
He said, "My dear, you have a raging chronic infection." And I just looked at him and I thought, I knew I was ill.
And what have we been getting wrong?
Men get 7 to 10 days. Cats get 7 to 10 days. Why do we get 3 days worth of antibiotics?
Episode 2. Treatment, alternatives and changing attitudes.
I found out about Professor Malone Lee, told him my saga and said to him, "I've been told I don't have an infection, but I'm in agony." He did a different type of urine test and he came back into his office and said, "My dear, you have a chronic, raging infection and I'm going to get you better." And he did tell me it would be a long, long journey.
This is Carolyn Andrew. She's the director of QTIC, a chronic UTI campaign group. Getting a QT diagnosis can be one of the most cathartic, emotional, but also daunting stages of the journey. Carolyn was lucky. She heard about the late Professor James Malone Lee, one of the first specialists to look into chronic UTIs, at a support group. But the vast majority of people don't get here. Out of the very limited number of specialist clinics in the UK, only one is on the NHS. The rest are all private.
So it's costing them £250 per appointment. And I know women who are paying £500, £600 a month for medication. I've spoken to women in Scotland, in Ireland, who are having to travel to London, stay overnight, travel back again. It's just absolutely, it's ridiculous the amount of money this is costing.
Access to treatment for people who can't afford private healthcare is therefore almost non-existent.
What's the waiting list like for your clinic?
Unfortunately, at the moment, it's hitting 72 weeks.
This is Dr. Raj, who we met in episode 1. She leads the only specialist chronic UTI clinic on the NHS.
I mean, it's horrible. This is going to really erode into your well-being, mental health, sleep. And to say to someone you've got to wait 72 weeks is not something anyone wants to say to anyone.
But talking to Dr. Raj, it's clear there are other structural barriers stopping people from finding treatment.
We've noticed that there are very few ethnic minority patients who come forward to the chronic UTI clinic.
Many studies have shown that women of Black and ethnic minority backgrounds are the least likely to be taken seriously when it comes to pain and having their symptoms recognised. Even though data is limited for these women with chronic UTIs, when looking at health outcomes in other areas, it's clear that they are far less likely to find a diagnosis and treatment.
If we parallel that to some of the studies in neurogynecology, you know, we're building these barriers up so that patients can't come to us.
Patients are very rarely referred onto or pointed in the right direction of these specialist clinics. Not many doctors know or understand what a chronic UTI is, but it's also to do with the controversial nature of the way chronic UTIs are treated.
Usually these patients are being treated like acute UTIs with 3-day courses of antibiotics repeatedly by GPs, walk-in centres, etc.
This is Dr. Kat Anderson. She currently works as women's health lead at a GP practice and runs a private clinic which specialises in treating chronic UTI. Up until very recently, the guidelines on UTIs for non-pregnant women stated that they should be given a 3-day course of antibiotics. And for people with recurrent and chronic UTIs, this would trap them in a cycle where their symptoms would quickly return. They'd wait to be given another 3 days, only for this process to repeat over and over again.
And some of these patients, knowing that these are their only sources of antibiotics and antibiotics work for them, will actually sort of, you know, almost be like health tourists popping around an area, going to different pharmacies, trying to accumulate enough three-day courses to give themselves, a week or 2 weeks, because they know that the longer courses of full-dose antibiotics actually provide some relief for them.
In the specialist clinics treating chronic UTIs, they work outside of this guideline, giving patients some form of long-term, full-dose antibiotics. For those of you who've had to take them, you'll know that even a short dose can be an unpleasant experience. They have a whole host of bad side effects, from thrush to nausea, and they're damaging to gut health. So this is something that makes most doctors and clinicians very nervous and often distrustful of chronic UTI treatments. This is Martha.
Once saw a urologist in Leeds 6 months before I got diagnosed at Harley Street.
One of the first private practices treating chronic UTI was set up by the late Professor James Malone Lee. We've come across the late professor and his work, which first looked into QT a few times. As well as setting up the specialist NHS clinic, he also created a private clinic on Harley Street. Martha found out about it and took the information to her next urologist appointment.
I came to her with, I think I have a chronic UTI, embedded UTI. And she wasn't dismissive of it, but she was dismissive of Harley Street's practices about the level of medication and antibiotics we take. And she called Professor James Malone Lee quirky or like a bit crazy. Another time I had to go to A&E because I thought I had sepsis. And I told him I was at Harley Street, and he was implying that I was crazy and had a death wish for being on this much medication all the time.
But clinics like Dr. Kat Anderson's believe the dangers of treating with long courses can be managed by taking precautions.
Because we are looking at giving the absolute minimum amount of antibiotics that we have to, yes, to help preserve the patient's guts by co-administering good bacteria to keep the guts healthy whilst we're using the treatment doses of antibiotics. But the majority of patients do really well on this regime. And I expect most patients to significantly be turning around by month three.
Another specialist clinic did a study in 2018 using data spanning 10 years, which showed that on average, it took 383 days of continuous treatment of first-generation antibiotics for symptoms to resolve. On the other end of the spectrum, there are individuals who are years down the line with no end in sight. And despite harsh side effects, patients carry on simply because where else would they go?
It was really controversial and really difficult. You know, I remember, you know, being a researcher and Professor Malone Lee being told that he's a maverick. You know, and he was trying to put forward that, look, these patients are getting better. They're suffering a great deal. And we're just slowly, slowly, meticulously trying to show you the science.
Not one specialist believes that this is an ideal way to treat the illness. But with so little research and knowledge about chronic UTIs, patients are faced with no alternative within a system that, until recently, denied the very existence of QT. And in many cases, this treatment is stopping an infection progressing further, potentially becoming life-threatening.
It gives you the impression that you're like going down a rabbit hole that perhaps isn't a good one if you've got a qualified doctor sitting in front of you saying that the guy who you think is going to like solve all of your issues is crazy. It's not very reassuring.
But where does this three-day guideline come from? It wasn't always the case that women are given 3 days of antibiotics, and it's connected to a more global anxiety. Antimicrobial resistance, or AMR.
The more you use antibiotics inappropriately, the more you drive this really scary, almost apocalyptic AMR crisis.
This is Professor Jennifer Roan. We met her in the previous episode, and she runs a research lab that specialises in UTIs that are hard to treat. Antimicrobial resistance is one of the top global public health threats. It's estimated that bacterial AMR was directly responsible for 1.7 million global deaths in 2019. UTIs are one of the most common bacterial infections in the world, and so have become a site of anxiety for overprescription.
On the one hand, you got the GP saying, I'm not allowed to treat my patients. You know, I don't want to make this problem worse with the antimicrobial resistance. But on the other hand, you've got a patient who needs to be treated. So there's this real tension now between antimicrobial stewardship, or, you know, not overusing them, not misusing them, and actually treating a bona fide infection that needs to be treated.
This three-day course guideline for women with a UTI came in around the early 2000s. Prior to this, the guideline specified 5 to 7 day treatments, and it was partly down to the global effort to reduce AMR that this guideline was changed.
The meta-analysis that this is based on showed that actually 5 days of antibiotics was far better at bringing down bacterial levels in the urine, but the majority of women saw a lot of symptomatic relief after 3 days of treatment, and considering antibiotic stewardship and considering the possibility of people getting side effects with antibiotics, it was thought to be better to just give 3 days. And actually, there's caveats on there about stalling giving treatment because a lot of UTIs will clear up on their own.
With all the misunderstanding and lack of research on UTIs, I wondered how well the repercussions of this change had been looked into, and if it led to better outcomes for women at all. Dr. Raj's team got data from NHS England from various patient groups around the world.
What we've seen is that not only does the incidence go up, but the number of times someone comes back to their doctor to report a UTI, that's also going up. And that's kind of happened since we've done this three-day prescribing.
We are still missing a cohort of patients where that shortness of treatment actually signs them into recurrent or chronic disease, which is very sad. And although it might only affect a minority, that minority is quite numerous. So I personally think that those changes in the way that we conduct our medicine have led to the burgeoning levels of recurrent and chronic UTI that we are currently seeing.
The evidence available at the time suggested 3 days of treatment was not enough to bring down bacteria levels to fully clear an infection. But this wasn't acknowledged as something that could have serious consequences, and the new guidelines were put in place.
There is growing awareness, and there are studies that show that 3 days of treatment, which is what women tend to get, 3 days of treatment is not long enough. There's a danger if you undertreat that you never get rid of the infection completely. I mentioned that the bacteria can hide, and maybe 3 days is enough to clear sort of the stuff on the surface, but it's not enough to clear the reservoirs. So if you don't completely treat, you'll end up perhaps with a, you know, basically a relapse. You've never actually gotten rid of it in the first place.
These missing pieces of research that make up the whole picture when it comes to women's health, coupled with an attitude that women's health issues are unserious or less important, is clearly dangerous. As well as putting women's safety at risk, it paved the way for even more antibiotics to be needed to treat hundreds of thousands of women.
I nearly fall off a log when I see the amount of antibiotics that have been thrown at men. With no culture results, male UTIs are regarded as more complex because they've got more piping, I expect, and they've got prostates. Quite often I have seen in NHS practices I've been in, men being given 6 weeks of antibiotics, commonly, and you don't see any run-of-the-mill British GPs giving 6 weeks of antibiotics to women with recurrent or chronic UTI.
Women go back and they ask for more, they beg, and they're told, sorry, we're not allowed to. Women are buying antibiotics online, and that is very worrying.
In the past, I think doctors had a lot more discretion I think the problem with guidelines is they try to fit everybody into the same mould. And other things in healthcare have happened which makes this very difficult. So things like, you know, you don't see the same GP anymore. There aren't enough doctors. So what happens is, you know, you were given a course of antibiotics and then no one will see you. No one will follow you up again. It's not like someone says, here, have 3 days, because that's in the guideline, but I'm going to see you on day three and I'm going to assess how you are. Then I'm going to give you some more if it's not quite there. So these factors, these are very pragmatic, practical, real-life factors which make medicine difficult. It's, you know, it becomes very hard when you're trying to treat everybody the same.
For at least the near future, it seems the option remains firmly with antibiotic treatments. Hyprex is an antiseptic and is often administered alongside antibiotics, which has shown good results. Some decide they can't tolerate the side effects of antibiotics and turn to alternatives like Chinese herbs or other natural remedies. But evidence for their effectiveness differs from case to case. So are there any better alternatives?
Antibiotics are the mainstay of UTI treatment, and I keep talking about Alexander Fleming. You know, it's been almost exactly 100 years since he discovered penicillin. We still don't have a better cure. Things are coming down the pipeline. I think vaccines are the most exciting thing on the horizon now. In the past, we didn't think that UTI actually caused much of an immune response, so people thought vaccines would never work, right? So in order to have a vaccine, you need an immune response. So if you get that COVID jab, your body's responding very strongly to the COVID jab, and it prevents you from getting COVID. But people thought with UTI that wasn't the case. People thought, oh, you know, it doesn't really do much down there. It doesn't make antibodies. So that's not true. It turns out that's completely false. And that's another exciting thing that we've discovered in recent years, not my lab personally, but the community, the research community as a whole. So you could imagine a time when if you're prone to recurrent UTI, you might get, an annual booster of this jab, and maybe it would help prevent those UTIs. But I have to say, because we've had so little research in the past, it takes, 20, 30 years to make a new therapy. So even though we're having growing interest in research now, it's going to take decades for that to translate to exciting new diagnoses and cures, I would say.
While this is hopeful, and while GPs are slowly starting to recognise that if the infection doesn't go away, it may need more antibiotics, patients currently have a long road ahead and need things to change faster than they currently are.
I picture my bladder being like a battlefield. The chronic UTI bacteria and the antibiotics like fighting for their life, trying to make me better. And then you see it as well. So the bladder wall is constantly shedding. And sometimes you get really enormous chunks in your urine, and that's often indicative of like a huge section of bacteria has just emerged or something like that, which can make you feel tense and anxious and excited all in one fell swoop, because you get excited that maybe another huge layer has been dislodged, and then tense because you think, oh my God, I'm going to flare. I need to get ready.
I was actually on 4 or 5 different antibiotics over a period of 3.5 years, and eventually my symptoms abated. And I've now, touch wood, had 5 years without any massive symptoms.
I really look forward to the day where I can go an hour without thinking about QT. It will feel like the most freeing moment in the entire world. I never feel free from it. It feels like a prison. Yeah.
It's taken us 7 or 8 years to get to where we are now. But last year, we finally, along with a lot of other amazing people, got the NHS. And now if you look up NHS UTI, you will now find that there's a section that says chronic UTI. And we reckon that is our biggest achievement to date. Unfortunately, it says, if this affects you, ask to be referred to a chronic UTI specialist. And that's where we now have a real sticking point. there are so few of them and GPs don't understand what they are. So they'll refer their patients to a urologist, and we're back to square one again, because a standard urologist in the NHS doesn't necessarily understand chronic UTI. So that's the next barrier.
In the final episode of Cutie, we ask, how does living with the illness affect your daily life? We'll meet the women who are beginning to turn the tide on women's health and investigate the growing problem of UTIs in children. To find a list of specialist treatments in the UK, head to chronicutiinfo.com. The link is in the description of this episode, as is the link to the chronic UTI campaign group, QTIC. Thanks to Carolyn Andrew from QTIC, Martha and Anna for sharing their stories in this episode. And thanks to Dr. Raj, Professor Jennifer Roan and Dr. Kat Anderson for their expertise. The art for this series was produced by Edie Medley. This podcast is powered by Transmission Roundhouse.